watches I ride in this wind. On my good horse I call you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Venner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica U.S., WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. Longtime listeners to this show have heard about how the resistance to the spreading of sewage sludge by waste management corporations in rural Pennsylvania gave birth to a local democracy movement where communities have asserted the right to protect their environment and way of life by passing local laws. This process has revealed to many people the level at which supposedly democratic government at the state and federal level is in fact enthralled to corporate interests. The democracy school movement that formed out of this has taught people in communities across the nation how to avoid the hamster wheel of regulatory wrangling and go straight to the heart of the matter, protecting the places we live and love. From Pennsylvania to New Hampshire to Spokane, Washington to Arcata, California, communities are organizing and refusing to become corporate sacrifice zones. This week, the fight for democracy comes home, that is, to my home, Schuyler County, New York, where residents of the town of Hector are organizing to stop the spreading of sewage sludge on our farmland. The show this week is intensely local, but I hope it will also prove valuable to all the communities where this show is heard. No matter where you go in America, the struggle for the future is underway. What you're going to hear is a recording of a community meeting held in Hector, New York on May 15th, sponsored by CAR, Citizens for Agricultural and Rural Responsibility, a nonpartisan group formed by Town of Hector, New York residents concerned about the health of our families, our community, and the rural land we love. This broadcast is timely because there will be another meeting on Thursday, May 22nd in Mecklenburg. I'll give details for local folks later in the show. A bit of history. Last year, people became alarmed when they realized a large dairy farm in the county was spreading sewage sludge on their fields. As a result of the uproar, the farmer agreed to stop using the sludge. We were lucky that the farm owners were a family that has farmed here for generations and were willing to listen to others in the community. However, the nature of this threat is that we can either keep fighting the same battle over and over until we lose because a corporation has bought land in our town and doesn't care what we think, or we can be proactive and win. The meeting featured a panel of experts on the subject and will make clear that this is a recurring threat that can lead to permanent environmental damage not only to the land where the sludge is applied, but to the land and water of neighbors. The speakers on the panel made clear that there is a campaign to dispose of this waste on the state's and nation's farmlands and collusion by state and federal agencies with waste corporations to cover up the dangers. Following the meeting, I'm also going to play you a talk by Sheldon Rampton, co-author of Toxic Sludge is Good for You, on how the PR industry works to defeat citizen groups on behalf of corporations with harmful activities. This to give people a heads up on tactics that may be rolled out against our citizen efforts. The first voice you'll hear is Deanna Anderson, moderator of the panel and a member of CAR.
I'm a Hector resident. I'm a fourth grade elementary school teacher at Enfield. I've lived on Newtown Road in Burdett for almost 20 years, an old farmhouse that is still very slowly being renovated. I'm here to give you an overview and introduce you to the panelists. We have some folks here with a lot of experience to kind of share their knowledge and information with you. This is a public meeting to talk about really a national concern that really can impact us locally here in the town of Hector. And the subject, of course, is sewage sludge disposal in Hector. So we're going to give you some information about what it is, how large the problem is, how we got here, why we should be concerned, who the players are, what we can do to protect our town. Please feel free to raise your hand and ask questions. You're going to get a lot of information. If you have really kind of deep, extensive questions, you may want to save them for the end because I'll do a little overview, and then Bob Barton's going to come up and tell you more information, and then we'll introduce our panelists as well, and then, you know, they're here to answer whatever questions you have left that, you know, anything we haven't covered. We'll talk a little bit about who we are, the problem. I'll introduce you to everybody, some background, some action strategies we might consider, and what you can do. Okay. We, who are basically up here, we decided to call ourselves CAR, which is the Citizens for Agricultural and Rural Responsibility. We're unincorporated. We're informal. We're just a group of Hector residents who've really gotten to know about this problem and become concerned about the problem of sewage sludge disposal. We have heard about this problem in surrounding towns. There are towns in Pennsylvania, towns, of course, in New York that are dealing with this problem. And, you know, there's some very severe issues. And so it's concerning us because it's really right here in this area. Unfortunately, the EPA and the DEC don't seem to be stepping up to the plate to protect us, which is what they're supposed to do. And that's why we're also have come together, because we know that, you know, it's up to us then to protect ourselves. We kind of want to get ahead of the curve here, you know, before there is a really major problem in Hector. So we have a network of people. We have a website. Obviously, you know, some of you may have already signed up. If you got information by email, please do sign up anyway. We may not have your email. A lot of emails went flying around, and we're hoping to keep people updated that way with further meetings or further information, things like that. We also have a voicemail telephone number if you want to offer questions, if you don't have a computer. Certainly, we don't all have a computer. We don't really have any money. This is just out of our pockets. We really are just local folks. And basically, we want to help the town of Hector kind of keep its rural nature, stay productive, and stay healthy for generations to come. This is the source of our problem, a water treatment plant. It takes a city or town sewage. It treats the water to the point that liquid can be released, but it's what's left that's the real problem. This is not necessarily a local treatment plant. It's just here for an illustration. Basically, the problem is that nationwide, people are trying to figure out what to do with sewage sludge. And really, rural New York is kind of a target for this kind of waste disposal. You know, when it's coming from wastewater treatment plants, sewage it's kind of dark and moist material. And unfortunately, most of the chemicals originally in the wastewater are trapped in this material, and they're concentrated. Sewage sludge can be full of industrial waste. It can have medicines that people have flushed down the toilet. It all goes to the same place. It can have insecticides in it. It can have radioactive waste in it. Really, no one knows for sure exactly what's in it, but there are a lot of chemicals at any one time. Interestingly, sewage sludge used to be dumped in the oceans, and that was made illegal because it caused too much damage. Back then, it was considered hazardous waste. Now the EPA and DEC have changed their rules, and it's no longer hazardous in a way, and landfills and agricultural use are encouraged. It's kind of a weird switch. So basically now, rural communities, farmers, large landowners have become targets for sludge disposal. Really, some of these practices that are happening now in the United States are outlawed in some European countries. And so that, you know, of course, causes us to think, you know, what do they know that we don't? Basically, the EPA tests for only a handful of contaminants. There are some estimates that there may be up to 50,000 contaminants in sewage sludge. Contaminants, again, meaning chemicals, radioactive waste, medical wastes. Basically, the current practice focuses on landfills, but they're filling up. And so now the EPA has decided that it is an acceptable risk to use and apply sewage sludge, treated sewage sludge, on agricultural lands. Again, this is the stuff that we can't legally dump in the oceans, but we can put it on farmland. Seems like there's something wrong with that picture. We've asked a number of folks to who have a lot of experience to give you some fair and balanced opinions about this problem. None of these people sitting here, none of these fine people are paid by any corporation in the waste management or disposal industry. We wanted to make sure that everyone sitting here has no conflict of interest, no connections to anybody who is in the waste disposal industry, so their ideas are influenced by scientific facts, not by economics, not by politics. I'll introduce you to each of them, and they'll give you a little bit of background about who they are, and then one of them, Bob Barton, is going to give you a little more background. I've just kind of given you a really quick overview. So we'll start with, because he's on the top of the list, Dr. Murray McBride, who is the new head of Cornell Waste Management Institute. He's the author of many refereed papers on the effects of agricultural amendments to soil. So this is Murray McBride, and thank you for coming.
Nice to be here. Yes, was just mentioned, I have just taken over as director of the Cornell Waste Management Institute. So that's a challenge because I still do some teaching and some research. But I've been at Cornell over 30 years on the faculty of crop and soil sciences and have studied mostly toxic metals in soils, micronutrients in soils, and to some degree organic contaminants in soils. I'm a soil chemist, basically.
So we also have Mr. Joe Dell, who's a resident farmer and now retired Cornell Cooperative Extension agent in field crops and soils. If you can introduce yourself, and let's give him a round of applause for coming on out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I was a extension agent and field crop specialist for 28 years, and we've had the farm in Mecklenburg for 45 plus years. And recently, back in 2000, we dispersed our herd for the last time, and since then, I've been raising vegetable crops, which we always did. And I was driving up here tonight, and I was thinking about the last time I was up in Hector. It was probably a couple of years ago, but we used to make this trip 3 days a week. We supplied Doug Bond and his roadside stand for a good many years, and after he went out of business, we also supplied Wickham. So we've been growing sweet corn for a long time. We also raise pumpkins, and I don't know how many people in this room ever were at our farm picking pumpkins. We used to offer hay rides and pick your own pumpkins, and we did that for about 14 years. So my experience in cooperative extension work, Schuyler County was one of the counties that I worked in. I worked in three other counties, and I did that for about 14 years, and finally decided I'd done it long enough and went back to the farm and been doing that ever since.
Our next panelist is Mr. Barth Gardner. He's a resident whose work involves the assessment of property in several counties around here. Barth?
Hello. How are you? My name is Barth Gardner. I long-life residence of town of Hector, lived here all my life in Mecklenburg. I have extensive appraisal experience. I own my own company. I've been doing that for 24 years, and just show some concern about the waste management and how it's being spread. And just I'm curious about how that might affect potentially property values down the road.
Thanks. We have Dr. Anthony Hay. He's a Cornell specialist studying biological effects of toxic chemical exposure. He's the head of Cornell's Institute for Comparative and Environmental Toxicology. Thanks for coming.
Sorry, I always wanted to do my queen wave. I've been at Cornell for the last 9 years, and my research area of interest is in organic pollutants, pesticides, pharmaceutical compounds, the things that we flush down the drain every day that end up in the sludge. And so over the last 9 years, we've been looking at local sludges. We've done a three-year longitudinal study of sludges from Cortland and Syracuse, Ithaca, and Cayuga Heights, and just looked at organic pollutants that are in them. We've also done some toxicological analyses to see how those soils affect things from earthworms to seedling germination. So we've worked firsthand with the sludge and have a little bit of an idea of what's in the sludges locally, at least. And yes, the universe of chemicals is quite broad, but there are a number of things that are in relatively high concentration that certainly aren't regulated by the EPA, and I think it's worthwhile discussing those types of things so that you can get a better idea of what's actually in the sludge that could be applied to the land.
We also have Ms. Valerie Gardner, Esquire, practicing lawyer with Democracy New York. Welcome, Valerie.
I'm an attorney. My practice is in Penn Yan. I don't do a whole lot of environmental legal work anymore because I spent several years doing that on pro bono basis for several communities and realized that our legal system just is not equipped to handle community concerns around these issues. In 2005, my husband Jack and I, and by the way, Jack and I met at the national formation of the first sewage sludge conference for activists in 1996. So we've been involved in sludge for a while and still are.
So at any rate, 2005, a group of area residents attended a Democracy School at Watson Homestead, and that was organized by the Finger Lakes Progressives. What that was a transformational meeting for folks in our area, learning about what's happening in other places in the country, new ways for communities to confront these kinds of proposals and projects that serious health risks are indicated for their communities. What do they do when the normal routes don't work, when the regulatory system really only serves to maybe get you a little bit of a setback or maybe a few less parts per million when the community itself doesn't want it? So there are some really interesting things that I'll be glad to talk about later that are happening around the country that is really transforming the ability and transforming communities' ideas about what they really have the power to do to control what's within their own communities. So I'll be happy to talk to you about that later.
Wonderful. It'll go to Bob next. And then our last panelist who's going to speak next is Mr. Robert Barton. He is a retired resident. He helped the Navy develop advanced acoustic technology for surface ships and submarines. He is a member of CAR. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you. Now that I've been retired from the Navy, I've taken another interest in the family farm that was started back in the early 40s. And hopefully to return it to productive growth of grains. And that's why I'm interested in this subject. I'm going to start you off with a little background of the topic and then get into some of the history of the issue. This is a picture of a wonderful dairy cow from the Boyceland Dairy in Georgia. The gentleman was given the opportunity to have free material that was guaranteed to be agriculturally desirable for field crops and hay. And the farmer believed them for almost a decade. When his cows grew sick, he couldn't figure out what was going wrong. After considerable digging into the situation, he found that the material being put on his fields was sewage sludge. When he probed further and started getting some help, he found that the city's records for this material were a bit spotty. The EPA stepped in to help the city, and together they issued a report affirming the wonderful quality of the sludge and how it was entirely within regulatory guidelines. Later investigations revealed that EPA and the city had manipulated the data. It was a cover-up. This is one of his dairy cows. Today he can no longer farm his land. It has been so compromised, and he is out of business. The waste management industry, waste disposal industry, was looking for many ways to get rid of the material. One that's been proposed and has actually occurred is we'll throw it in the forests. We'll just spray it. This is a picture of a Virginia forest taken, I believe, in 94. Nice stuff there. Wouldn't want to hike there, would you? Another disposal application is places like golf courses. This is a pile of sludge that was being readied for application to a golf course, and they piled it up near a school. The school had to essentially close for that day because the kids were getting symptoms of exposure. There are more examples, but you get the picture. It is probably a good point to mention here that there is not just one type of sludge. There is Class A, Class B, EQ, and products which contain mostly sludge. They differ primarily in the amount of pathogens and the concentration of less than 10 heavy metals. The products don't all look the same either, but they are all sludge. We'll dispense with the gory pictures and go on to the larger story, and I'll give you a small history, the players, some of the damage, and the last and probably the most scary part is the unknown unknowns. Over the last decade, we've all heard the short news blurbs regarding the general problem of landfills. We're running out of land, rural towns don't want to be dump sites, and the truck traffic is considerable. The dumping of sewage sludge is just one type of a more general problem of getting rid of society's waste. And it is not just cities. New York alone, New York State alone, has several hundred water treatment plants. And it is not just residential waste. There are large numbers of industries who use the sewers for waste disposal. And they were grandfathered in, basically. And everything that runs off the land into the drains and into the treatment plants, from pesticides to parking lot oil products, fertilizers to car washes. These are the major parts of the history, and it can get really too detailed for people to stay awake. We'll just go through the major efforts. In 72, Congress passed the Clean Water Act, stopping the discharge of hazardous waste into the waterways. This meant that wastewater now needed to be treated so that it could be disposed of. The treatment concentrated the chemicals inherent in that wastewater, including industrial waste, stormwater runoff, hospital discharges, as well as the human waste. There were no real significant restrictions on what went into the sewers. And remember now, the sewers feed the sewage treatment plant. Congress further allowed the states to become the enforcing authorities of the act. In New York, it is the DEC. Next, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act of 76, namely the RCRA, governed the disposal of hazardous waste. But the sewage sludge disposal industry got Congress to exempt sewage sludge from any regulations, effectively turning hazardous waste into disposable material without regulations. Congress directed EPA further to establish regulations on sewage sludge disposal, which are now codified as the 503 rule. Complete pathogen elimination was not required, and only 10 heavy metals were regulated. The EPA established these regulations based on what the sludge industry could meet with current practices, not based on the human health or environmental health criteria. Ironically, EPA even threatened to fine Honolulu for demanding scientific proof of the product being pathogen-free. In 1992, in an update to this 503 rule, EPA now calls sewage sludge biosolids. Since industry was complaining of resistance by consumers to using sludge or sludge products, EPA also responded to industry requests to allow sludge to be a component of agricultural markets, such as EnviroSoil. For many decades, long prior to EPA's entrance in the scene, Milwaukee has marketed a sludge product for consumer use on home gardens, Milorganite. It's available from Agway. Other cities followed suit. Now, this material is sewage sludge and contains the usual heavy metals. The EPA and the WEF, whom I will talk about next, are trying hard to convince vegetable growers that this material is safe for vegetables for human consumption. Today, it is still unacceptable for organic vegetable production. In summary, the U.S. EPA has created regulations that industry can cheaply meet rather than doing the research to establish scientific, meaningful guidelines that protect the citizens and their environment. Okay, who are the players? Well, there's basically what we've already seen is the water treatment plant operators, and then there's a group called the Water Environmental Federation. That federation is essentially a trade group and a lobbyist group composed of the treatment plant operators, sludge disposal firms, and other waste handling firms. One of these firms in New York City brags about how 60% of its pelletized product is used in Florida orange groves. That's a lot of product going on orange groves. It's clearly focused on the cheap disposal of sludge and not the protection of American citizens. The EPA is another player because this agency was charged by Congress to regulate sewage sludge disposal. It was mandated by Congress to develop guidelines for application to land. But Congress was motivated by members of the WEF. Congress also at times directed EPA budget to be given to the WEF. And often these budgetary directions included funding research topics that ended up at WEF members, thus violating the objectivity of any scientific results. Let's now look at some of the damage. Daniel Pennock died in 1995 from exposure to staph while playing in a nearby farm's fields that had been heavily sludged. EPA, the Pennsylvania DEP, and every other respondent agency came together to defeat any implication of sludge as the primary agent of death. Tony Bayan died in 1994 from exposure to sludge in a mine reclamation area 1 week after riding around on his bike in the material. The same agencies came together to defeat any implications of sludge. Reclamation of mined land is another application of sludge that the EPA has authorized. October 1995 in Greenland, New Hampshire, dozens of people were afflicted with nausea and respiratory symptoms after abutting fields were sludged with municipal waste. One teenager died. We've already seen the pictures of the Boyce Land Dairy Farm in Georgia. A nearby farm in Georgia also, the McElmurray Farm, had the same problem. The court recently awarded him $1.5 million judgment against Augusta, Georgia. The judge in this case found, quote, senior EPA officials took extraordinary steps to quash scientific dissent and any questioning of EPA's biosolids program. By the way, the sludge contaminants were found in marketed milk from these and neighboring dairies by the FDA. The level of thallium was 120 times more than allowed. The above are just extraordinarily notable incidents, none of which has swayed the EPA to change its advocacy of sludge disposal. In all of these incidents, even though common sense would indicate a very strong cause and effect, the way we do science legally prohibits these such conclusions. And the EPA and the WEF use this to conclude exactly the opposite, that there are no effects. The scientific method demands a controlled experiment that forces a scientific conclusion. But we suspect that there are no human subjects who would participate in such an experiment. Rather, the way we are convinced of damage is when a larger than normal part of our population is clearly injured over a long time. Remember, DDT, asbestos, lead paints, lead in gasoline, thalidomide, and all the others. From an economic perspective, the market value of our homes is likely to be impacted. Numerous real estate agents have been polled on the subject, and almost universally, they felt bound by ethics to reveal such disposal actions in the neighborhood, even though they could not put an exact value on the impact. They knew it was not advantageous, So really, what we really have a strong responsibility of economic damage to our town, not even mentioning impacts on tourism along Route 414. And finally, the last issue. We don't even know what we don't know. Several researchers have observed a large number of chemicals in sludge, as Tony has just mentioned. Some estimate over 50,000. The concern we have is exemplified by the history of DDT. A wonderful pesticide when first released, but over the years, well, you know, it is still being marketed around the world. Recently, a federal court has affirmed the right to put any chemical in the sewer. In Colorado, it was waste from radioactive materials processing plant. Now we add radioactivity to phytotoxins, endotoxins, pesticides, and. Another example is one company decided to rid itself of cement kiln dust, a waste product of the cement manufacturing process. Combined with sewage sludge, the resulting product becomes an ag lime replacement. The problem is the cement manufacturing process often uses waste oil, and often excessive levels of thallium show up in the sludge product. Thallium? That used to be used as a rat poison. It is still highly toxic, but it is still heavily used in a number of products. By the way, thallium is not one of the metals regulated by the EPA in sewage sludge. The bottom line to all of this discussion is, shouldn't we be more prudent and be cautious? Can't we develop methods of either recovering these chemicals or detoxifying them with certainty? And finally, what happens to towns like Hector in rural New York? They become prime targets for disposal. The land is inexpensive. There are a few people who might be upset. And the few who are can be easily intimidated by corporate lawyers coming at them. Those same towns have few resources to fight such attacks. There's a legal assault called a slap suit. That's called a strategic lawsuit against public participation. The result of no zoning is an open door for any owner, corporation, or citizen to do anything legal in the state. Landfills, no problem. And even if the town passes a prohibiting ordinance, if the land is transferred before the ordinance enactment, the zoning in effect at the time of transfer governs. Landfills have tremendous local impact. Just think of the current controversy of waste haulers on 96B going to Seneca Meadows. What might your property values do? Would tourists be enchanted with such a site? The town might think that there are great tax advantages, but consider that there is little to accept to tax except the land, which, oh, by the way, is not really productive, valuable land anymore. So we are a perfect target, and our DEC has provided the state with regulations that permit it. At this point, I'd like to turn back the floor to the moderator, who'd like to lead you through some discussions. If there are any questions, please feel free to holler right now. With that, Deanna is back.
Bob, this is really, you know, before we talk about, well, are we concerned? What should we do? What can we do? That was a pretty in-depth presentation, and this is a really great time if you have questions for our panelists, just to kind of about exactly about the chemicals in sludge or anything about the political aspect of it. This would be a great time to ask them, or if any of the panelists want to kind of, you know, go on a little bit about one of these topics. This would be the moment. Yes, sir.
Burgers have agreed not to spread sewage sludge anymore, so there is no current problem from that source in this town. My question is, are there any other known threats to the town from other sources?
Does anyone want to?
Well, I'll actually.
Valerie Gardner. Democracy New York.
As far as your town goes, I think one of the things that Bob pointed out is very significant is that you have zoning, you have other local laws, but you don't have zoning in Hector? No zoning ordinances. Well, don't worry about it, you know what, because they're no good to deal with this anyway. But right now is exactly the time, if you don't have a threat and you don't have an application for this in your town, to actually do something about it. Because by acting now, you're going to avoid the very large legal problem of trying to stop it once it's started or once it's proposed. So this is exactly the time for the community to get together and be proactive about how you're going to handle these things in the future. You had quite a scare with the past proposal that appears, at least for now, to have gone away based on the farmers' voluntary agreement. However, that's nothing that's going to protect you from the next and the next and the next. And I know just from living regionally here that Hector's been hit a few times with some projects that the community has not been in favor of, and it's been quite difficult to be able to fight back, and you've got some pretty courageous folks over here. I'm aware of that. So my suggestion to you would be that even though it might seem like a really good time to go home and sit on the couch and say, shoo, that was a close one, that's exactly the last thing really you should do if you're concerned about the community and about not only sludge, but other threats similar to that in the future.
A person in the audience who was off mic responded to the previous questioner. He said, I think the problem is we have a processing facility in Syracuse, New York, that has been depositing their waste for the last 2 years in surrounding counties. The question becomes, where's next? We don't know where they're going to want to put this stuff next. Bottom line is, it's cheaper to dump it on property in Hector or whatever than dispose of it in the landfills where it's supposed to go. In fact, the landfills are lined nowadays to keep our milk cartons safe, but they're putting this on our farm fields. That's what I'm concerned about.
Can I just make a comment?
Local farmer Joe Dell.
How many went to the meeting over in Mecklenburg? I don't know, when was it, back in the winter or, yeah. I was very disappointed with the way that thing ended up. In fact, I got up and left. I thought that the town would use that as an opportunity to say either the town or the county or some public official who was there, and there were several there, to say that, you know, I think it's time for us to take a look at this, just for the reasons that you've just illustrated. And nothing was said. All that was said was, you know, just be thankful you have farmers around to produce food. And farmers don't require much in the way of services. And I thought, boy, that was a room full of people when I walked in there. You could feel the tension. Those people were mad. And I don't know when they left whether they were still mad or whether they were satisfied with the way that discussion went. But I was very, very disappointed. I thought that was an excellent opportunity for the town to show some leadership and to say that, you know, now's the time. We better take a look at this down the road. There's going to be other issues. There's going to be other circumstances and other things that we're going to want to keep out of the town. But nothing was said. The other point I would like to make is that one thing that bothered me as a farmer, and I'm pretty well out of business, is that it put farming and agriculture under a microscope. And I don't like that. I don't like the fact that people are going to think about what I'm doing and whether I should be doing something else and whether I'm doing it right. And those of us who make our living from the land take good care of it and try to do the best job we can. And this, to me, put farming and farmers under a microscope, and I don't like that.
I don't understand the point you're just trying to make. What do you mean under the microscope?
Well, what I mean is that the general public looks, let's say you're Joe Farmer out on Gobbler's Knob and you've got a little small orchard, you go out with a sprayer, and your next-door neighbor sees you going out and say, "Now I wonder what he's doing with that. Now, what's in that? Maybe it's only lime sulfur and water, you know." I don't like that feeling. I don't like someone looking at what I'm doing over my shoulder. And boy, I don't. There are no Bergens in the room here, but they certainly put. There are. You certainly put yourself under a microscope.
How does the general population get the assurance that nothing nasty is being done?
Someone wanna?
All I can speak for is myself, and you know I follow what's recommended. The cost of pesticides has gone right through the roof, mm-hmm. and if a little bit is good, that's what I use. A little bit. I don't go overboard on stuff, and I think most people are that way.
I see a hand up over here, and I just want to add to that that. I think part of the issue is that this stuff is legal and it's heavily marketed. And I think there have been farmers who've been caught in a bind. They thought, okay, then, you know, DC approves this, EPA approves this, it's okay. You want to speak more to that?
I'm a fourth generation farmer. There's some people who think that when we go into the fields to work, that we're going to put on as much as we can just to get rid of it, and that's not the case. We have a nutrient plan, how much we can apply, what time we can apply it. They always think, well, we don't like this neighbor, so he's going to get three times as much as we should put on. You know, you can't do that. We fill out paperwork and everything else. They spread manure behind my house in the spring, just as much as everywhere else.
Absolutely. And again, getting back to the sludge issue, which is somewhat different than the slurry issue, although I know it was applied, there are guidelines, and I think there are farmers who are trying very hard to be responsible, yet the information they're given is incorrect. And I think that the Bergen stepped up to the plate with that. And right now they've stopped using, as far as I know, the sewage sludge. But, you know, they used it for a while. And we're not, you know, any farmer could at this point in the town of Hector start applying it and may not know that there are some real, real concerns for their land and the safety of, you know, of their herd as well in the application of it. Yes.
Yeah, this could be to anybody on the panel, but I understand that some farming being in the state it is for a lot of small farmers, some small farmers have actually turned their farms into dumps, if you will, of just receiving this stuff and making a profit as a disposal. I've read in certain areas. Is that something that would be allowed here in New York State, given the quality of the enforcement and monitoring?
Could anyone want to speak to that? Bob, you're nodding your head.
Bob Bart.
The DEC regulations are relatively clear on what is legal. It is legal for any landowner to start up and ask for a permit to dispose of waste, dispose of sewage sludge, dispose of septage. And it's all codified in the regulations. And fundamentally, if a town is not happy with a large section of its land being turned into a sewage sludge disposal site, they have no recourse. The town has no recourse, literally, because it's legal. And I think that's where some of the discussion comes about is, do we really want that kind of operation to be legal in the town? And my personal thing is I'm a little bit more concerned about having some large chunk of land turned into a sewage disposal site. That's kind of scary to me. But that's just me.
Sir, back here.
I guess it's just a comment, but we seem to be beating around the bush. Sludge is what comes off the bottom of the tank after everything's settled out. You can refine the water and make it potable water in theory. So what gets the scraping is off the bottom of the tank where everything is settled out between heavy metals and every other junk that goes to the bottom of the tank is what we're putting on our field. So therefore, logic carries that is going to go down through your fields over the years. If you spread it on the field a number of years, you're going to have 8 inches of heavy metals working down through your field. And you'll never get it out of there. And your field will become a brown field.
Can someone speak to that on the panel? Someone?
Dr. Murray McBride.
On the metals, it is, I mean, to give you the good news on that, the metal levels, as EPA will tell you, in sludges are not as high as they were 20 or 30 years ago, although that's for the 9 metals that they regulate. I have some differences of opinion as to what level of metal is actually a problem in agricultural soils. EPA allows very, very high levels. So when they tell you, when you read literature that says, oh, even after 10 or 20 or 30 years of application, you're not even reaching 10% of EPA's limits, to me that doesn't mean very much, because 10% of EPA's limits is still very, very high. But back to the issue of what about the metals that we don't know about? Bob referred to some of those, mentioned thallium. There's tin, there's now silver showing up at pretty high levels. Some of these are pretty toxic. None of these are regulated under the EPA rules. By and large, they're not even measuring them. But there is a new national survey of sewage sludges across the United States. It'll be coming out at the end of this year. I've got a preliminary draft that shows the range of metals that you're going to find. I think they analyzed 85 sewage treatment plants across the U.S., which still is not a big enough sampling to be representative of the United States. But even that shows that some sewage treatment plants are putting out very high levels of certain metals, some of which are not regulated. So I guess what I'm saying is that according to EPA, if you look at that list of 9 metals that they regulate, things are better than they were 20 or 30 years ago. When I first came to Cornell, the city of Binghamton, the Binghamton-Johnson City sewage treatment plant was generating a sludge product that had over 100 parts per million cadmium in it. That went onto one farm near SUNY Binghamton. We went and sampled that farm. That farm had such high cadmium in it, it basically ruined that farm. So I don't know what has happened to that land since, but it went into litigation. We weren't allowed to go near it. I haven't been back to it. That was back in the, they said, those were the bad old days. That was cadmium. We know about cadmium now, and we regulate cadmium, and cadmium levels in sludges now are pretty low, but there'll be another metal that we'll have to deal with, and that's what concerns me.
Yes.
Let's get Anthony up on the organics. Maybe say something about
Dr. Anthony Hay.
Sure. Organic pollutants, things that we think of typically as being results of industrial processes. The good news is those aren't really present at high concentrations anymore. The wastewater treatment plants are designed to meet the rules that were enacted by the Clean Water Act, and they've done a good job. They've cleaned up our water. Sludge is a necessary evil because we want clean water, and clean water is really important. You have this sludge that is filled with the residuals afterwards, the heavy metals. We no longer allow free release of industrial pollutants. So we, in our surveys of local sludges, we don't see a lot of industrial pollutants, not very many at all. What we see are a lot of compounds that the EPA is not even thinking about. We see things like triclosan, which is an antimicrobial. If you use Colgate Total toothpaste, that's going straight down the drain. So that's an antimicrobial compound. We see personal care products. We see things like fragrance compounds, detergent breakdown products. Those three compounds that I've talked about, they all have estrogenic activity, so they mimic estrogen. So is there something from an organic standpoint that's acutely lethal? No. Nothing that you're going to drop dead from. Are there things that are going to potentially have subtle effects on the land? Yeah. And so those are the things that we are looking at. These, we call them emerging pollutants, but they're not even on EPA's horizon for regulating. Things like bisphenol A, brominated diphenyl ethers. So these words may sound like gobbledygook to you, but they're there are chemicals that people are beginning to be concerned about. Bisphenol A got a lot of attention last month because it was people were beginning to realize again that it's found in baby bottles and it's found in soda cans, and we find that in sewage sludges on a regular basis. Again, none of these things are regulated, and all of the things in our experience that the EPA is regulating from an organic standpoint, they're all being met. So the PCBs are down. The PAHs are down. Things like creosote. All of those things are down. So that's the good news. The bad news, and I think Bob makes this point over and over again about the unknown unknowns. Well, they're not all unknown. We don't know what their biological effects are for humans. We can point to examples of environmental effects. And so there's a lot of uncertainty. These things are not on the EPA's list. They're not being regulated. There are a few industrial pollutants that still are being found, but by and large, the industrial pollutants are, from an organic standpoint, are not what I would be concerned about if it was me. The metals are more persistent. The organics will, most of them, degrade over time. PCBs aren't going to, but PCB levels are way down. So I don't know if I've answered your question sufficiently, but one thing I will add, if you're going home and you're doing research on this topic, and I encourage you to look. There's a lot of resources out on the internet. One of the things that surprised me as I got involved in sludge research was the types of comparisons that were used to point out the value of sludge application to land. And you'll see a lot of this out there in the published literature, so the scientific literature, but also in the popular press, showing that application of heavy rates of sewage sludge to Superfund sites or deserted mines turns them into lush gardens. And I've seen examples of that. And it's certainly, when you take a site that is already dead, I've seen examples where putting sewage sludge on it ties up the metals temporarily and allows cover crops to grow. Those soils are basically dead, and you're improving them a little bit. To say with that example that you'll improve your farmlands if you use a similar practice, there's a disconnect in the logic there. Chemotherapy is great for cancer patients, not so good for the rest of us. It has inherent risks, and so I think that analogy is worth bringing up.
Questions right here.
My question for the panel is about long-term monitoring of the runoff into the aquifer and estuaries. The Chesapeake Bay Foundation says they're finding some of these elements washing into their area.
The question, if I may rephrase it for the audience, is are there any of these chemicals or metals showing up in measurements into the watersheds? Most of the Cayuga Lake watershed network monitorings is primarily for agricultural runoffs, E. coli, and never any heavy metals. So fundamentally the answer is, other than spot sampling by some person and sending it to a special laboratory for chemical and assay of heavy metals, it is not being done.
Valerie Gardner.
I think one of the most telling things that we know about water contamination is that it's illegal now to put this in the ocean because it was creating huge dead zones. And so one of the primary problems with looking at this in terms of data collection is that there are over 100,000 components, possibly many, many more, because you never know. Anything that can be in sewage sludge is anything that anyone, not just you or me, anything that anyone, any industry, could flush down their toilet and end up in the sewer. So we're talking, yes, industrial chemicals, yes, household chemicals, women who are on birth control pills, of course, that is water soluble, so you've got estrogen in the water. In addition to that, you just anything. One of the visuals that I thought was most helpful when I started learning about sewage sludge was thinking about it this way. Would you take an apple, dunk it in a little glass of 2,000 flushes, and offer it to your kid to eat? Because the reality is that We don't know. They're testing for a dozen things. That's it, out of a million things that can be in there. And we're not just thinking about each singular possible toxin. We don't know the synergistic effect of these things either. So, you know, when we test for one thing standing alone, but nobody's looking at the health impacts of several chemicals coming together and what the results of that are. What we do know is that we've got a dead zone in the ocean, and that's why we can't put it there anymore. What we do know is that when you put it on the land, if it just stayed there and the farmer only has themselves to blame if they happen to make a mistake in not knowing what they were putting on their land, that'd be one thing. So maybe you could say that, oh, well, you know, they get what they deserve because they didn't check it out. But that's really unfair to the farmers, and it's really unfair to put them in that position because nobody's looking at what is really in this stuff, and nobody's disclosing to them what's really in this stuff. And it doesn't stay within the boundaries of the fields, you know, and unfortunately, we have to worry about the fact that we've got groundwater that carries this stuff. There are airborne matters. The two young men who died in Pennsylvania, that was staph infection because they were in the fields right after the stuff was applied. And so, yes, those are extreme examples of sludge application. Are you likely to get it? Is somebody automatically going to drop dead? No, absolutely not. But the point is the risks are unknown. They can be extremely high, and you may not be able to remediate them because once it's on there, then what? Once your cows are already being poisoned, once the water is already contaminated, then what? And I know that, you know, I think that there are a good many people who prescribe to the precautionary principle, show me that it's not going to hurt us, and then okay. But they just can't do that right now. There are too many unknowns, and at least from my perspective, having looked at this for several years, I am deeply concerned about anyone, whether it's a farmer or not. I mean, I come from a farming family. I'm deeply concerned about anyone getting caught up in that because there are so many risks financially as well as health-wise to the community.
Dr. Anthony Hay.
We do know a little bit about how these things move, and they do have increased mobility when they're applied in sledges. The metals have some increased mobility, but we're not putting on masses that are going to affect Chesapeake's mass balance of metals at the moment. And because the application is spotty, the sewage sludge application is not adding to the metal loading significantly from a statistical standpoint. In other words, when we measure this much, we can't necessarily tell this much extra has come from sludge. I think the local problem is really the one we want to focus on. We should all be concerned about our greater watersheds, but the local watersheds are where we're going to see the highest impacts because these things are, this is where the administration of the dose occurs. And so, well, I think it's very important that we think on a broader scale. Sewage sludge is a local issue as far as the immediate pollution goes. Murray, do you have any?
Yeah, I would agree with that. But but that's only because the situation is the way it is now. So the question is, I mean, that's what the problem we had with EPA's original risk assessment. They said, oh well, this sludge is only going on something like 1% of the farmland in the United States, and therefore on average there's no problem. But first of all, they weren't extrapolating into the future when obviously they're aiming to get virtually all sewage sludges to go on farmland, in which case that percentage goes up. And as more sewage treatment plants are built and population increases, a higher and higher percentage gets applied. So in the short run, that's absolutely right. In the longer run, and if you get, you know, something like 1,000-acre application sites, which happens out in the Midwest, you can get broader contamination issues.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with what Murray said at all. All I'm saying is at the local level, you can't, to a regulator or to someone who's trying to sell you sludge, they're not going to buy the argument that you're polluting the Chesapeake by polluting your soil. It takes that type of amendment. But I think by focusing on local pollution issues, this is where the immediate impacts are going to be. But certainly, as we scale up, we encounter greater and greater problems.
One of our panelists discusses an assessment. Can we hear about the impact on the real estate values of this issue?
You know, that's part of the concern. This being so relatively unknown in the real estate issues, it draws concern to the standpoint of disclosure. Anytime you're selling a piece of real estate, you're under obligation to give full disclosure to your buyer. Do you know of any toxic waste dumps and that type of thing? It's a questionnaire that goes right down through. And the question is, are you being truthful? And what's the ramification if you're not being truthful of a transaction? Do we have any working knowledge of cause and effect at this point at the local level here in the town of Hector? No. I don't have any working knowledge of any dispute or any value decrease. Common sense tells me over time, if your groundwater and things happen, it could be a potential problem. And that's where we're at. We're so relatively new to this, and I don't have any working knowledge, but
my understanding is that land where sludge has been applied is no longer eligible for organic certification.
I would say, you know, the application and the decertification from, in my working knowledge of organic, is that it doesn't need to be sludge. It could be any pesticide. The land has to be,
I think when dairy farms convert from conventional to organic, there's a period of time where usually it's 3 years, and the requirements are getting stiffer, a waiting period to clear the land. Now, in the case of sewage sludge, I don't know about that. It might eliminate it altogether.
Is there an alternative to dumping or landfill?
There's a lot more work on that kind of that kind of taking care of the problem done in Europe. Excuse me? There are patented processes by companies in Switzerland, for example. They're pyrolytic processes. I don't know the details of it because they're patented, but they are forcing themselves to take care of the problem in other ways. Just as a comment, the Europeans have a different attitude towards this material. They tend to be more precautionary. There are countries there who literally will not allow sludge to be put on farmland, period. They just say no. Let's be a little careful. The one action that was fought recently in the last several years was to reclassify sewage sludge as compost. That's an interesting action, because when it's turned into compost, by definition, all sorts of regulations disappear on it, and it becomes organic.
Pyrolysis is the process of high temperature and heat without air, and you make a gas that can be burned, so it's syngas. Other processes that have been explored have been incorporating it into bricks. And so there are different groups in different countries that are looking at waste disposal processes. I think the argument that people are concerned about is, if land application is made easy, then research into alternatives will disappear. If we don't voice our objection, then there's no impetus at the government level to fund this. There's no economic incentive, because companies are able to get rid of it inexpensively. So whether you want sludge on your land or not, by deciding, you don't have to know if it's right or wrong from a moral standpoint, just whether or not you want it or you don't. And would you want the county, the state, another organization to tell you that you have no right to prevent its application? And if there are no alternatives, if we don't raise our voices, there won't be better alternatives, is my feeling.